jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Let's get crazy. Welcome to the fourth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2019. My name's Marcus and I'm joined this week by Faz. Welcome back onto the show, mate.
Yeah, g'day everyone. I know there's a bit of disappointment out there hearing it's not Mark, but I'll try and do my best to fill in. Very excited to be back for season 2019. Have done the one Patreon exclusive show, so if you'd like to check that one out, I'm sure Marcus will give the spruik a bit later. Good to be back to the general audience.
No, I'm sure the community are actually hanging out to have you back, Faz. We had a couple of questions about whether or not Dunny and yourself will be back. So we didn't quite line up timings with Dunny, but he'll be back very shortly. You know, the community are keen to hear from him, and he normally has a pretty big season anyway between DT talk and some Supercoach stuff as well. So we're all glad to have you back on the show, mate. We're looking forward to some good advice. For the listeners who are just joining us for the first episode, or if this is your first episode of the season, we have recorded the other three positional shows already. So we started off with the midfield, then went to the forwards. Last week was the rucks, and this week is the last of the positional series with the defenders. So go back and have a listen to that if you haven't already. And for anyone considering, we've recorded three bonus Patreon episodes to go alongside the three positional shows. And as well as that, we've recorded that bonus that Faz was talking about. So there are actually four bonus episodes out for our patrons, totaling about 80 or 90 minutes worth of bonus content. So we've made a very concerted effort to do a little bit more for our patrons, and don't shy away anymore from saying that we wouldn't be doing the show anymore without our patrons. And so we need to provide a bit more bonus content to that community to say thank you and to incentivize a few more of you to come on board. We had that feedback last year that the patrons didn't get enough bonus content. So that's what we're going to be trying very hard to do. Last year, we did say that might be our last, and we were not joking when we said we wouldn't be still going without the Patreon. So thank you very much for everyone who signed up in the last week. Last week, we did mention that the Supercoach Coach Patreon only group, the leader of that at the end of the season, the overall leader, will be awarded with $250 cash as a bit of a thank you and incentive to get competitive about that league, as well as a cap and a stubby holder to keep your face out of the sun at the footy and your beers cold during a celebratory 2019 season, hopefully. So you've got that to look forward to if you're a Supercoach Coach Patreon as well. And we're also doing Patreon only ranked leagues. And we're also, of course, as we do each year, do our public ranked leagues, and the league codes have already started going out for that. So if you want to get on board, it's not too late. You've missed out on the first few leagues by the time this show's gone out, but don't forget to sign up. And the links are on supercoachcoach.com.au via the podcast postings, or you can check out our social media accounts to get those details. And if you can't find them, just message us directly and we'll make sure to get those details to you. All right, that's enough of a intro. Let's get into the actual defenders now. Before we start off with covering the top six defenders from last year, as we've done with the other positional shows covering the top of the positions from 2018, Faz, be keen to get your thoughts on the previous three shows that we've recorded so far. And if anything sort of perked your ears, or you had any contrasting thoughts or any just additional detail you'd like to share with the community, it'd be good to get your thoughts on the rest of the positions and how your team is shaping up so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a listen to all three of the positional shows, and I thought last week's one, the Ruck show, was a very interesting one. It's always good to have a bit of healthy disagreement between the hosts, and we really had that in spades. I guess it's a bit clear in the rucks, there's only the two on-field positions, and so the structures can be quite different. And I found it very interesting hearing both you and Mark's thoughts on the do we go Gorn Grundy set and forget option, or is there some better value options out there? Is there anything else? And I think that I'm inclined to agree with your position. My team started with a Gorn Grundy combo. It really is just that there's no other options sort of jumping out at me. I was hoping that, you know, maybe with the injury in St Kilda to Billy Longa, that might open up another option, but it seems like Rowan
Marshall.
Rowan Marshall, yep. He he looks to have taken the number one mantle for now, but he's up forward, so that doesn't really solve any options for us. And I would agree with Mark's thoughts as well, that if Mumford was available from the start of the year, then he would probably be very highly in consideration for my team. So I'm going to just add another, I thought it might be helpful to have, you know, another voice out there when we sort of have two fairly different options and it could be a bit difficult to make a decision. I'm going to go with the set and forget option. And I thought that as the show went on, it did seem like Mark's 20% chance of starting those two guys did seem to increase a bit by the end. He still called it 20%, but it seemed a bit of a bigger 20% to me. And I just thought I'd comment one point that I sort of thought of as you were going through the options of potentially starting two rookie rucks, and then probably would be Grundy that you'd start, and then have the two rookie options. Just another thought that I'd add in is that because there's only the one ruck bench spot, there's no loophole options in the ruck line, whereas other positions on the field, you can usually manufacture a situation where if you're not too sure which of your two rookies is going to be the highest scorer, you've got a non-playing player that you can sort of swap onto the field and try and maximize your points there. But because the rucks are so limited with only the one bench spot, you just don't really have that option, and you are stuck with whoever you decide to start on field. And with some of these young ruckmen, I think that there could be some fairly varying scores. You could see sort of games down in the sort of 30s and 40s and maybe some as high up into the 80s and 90s, and it would be pretty difficult to predict that week to week. So that has me, again, leaning away from that option and sort of sticking with the set and forget.
Yeah, looks like it should have had you on last week as to gang up on Mark.
It would have just been the two of us. It could have been a 5-minute episode. So.
All right, let's get on to some defenders then, mate. Top six defenders for 2018. Let's start with the first bloke, Jake Lloyd at 608K. Averaged 112 in Supercoach last year. Massive. Those were midfield-type numbers. His previous best was nowhere near as high, being 87 the year before. And that concerns me a little bit. But when you're that much of a standout option, a lot of the time, that's enough to get you reselected into Supercoach teams. Where are you sitting on Lloyd, mate?
It really is that jump in scoring that has me the most concerned, that it was a 25-point jump from his previous best season to what he scored in 2018. And it just seems like it's going to be difficult to keep that up, don't you think? It could be a bit of a regression to the mean with Jake Lloyd, and then you're spending so much money that you really need him to keep that scoring going. I'd be worried about spending over $600,000 on a player that I'm not certain is going to keep up those numbers, and it seems difficult to see where there's much room to grow. He had such a strong year last year that I can't really see a big jump in his scoring. Are you attracted by Lloyd?
So as per the first few episodes, I think the listeners out there would know that I've got quite a few players probably locked in already, being Gorn, Grundy, Dangerfield, Heaney. Now, they already take a fair chunk of salary cap, and then you consider the fact that in the midfield, you're mostly going your really premium options. So I am not going to have a lot of cash left to spend elsewhere on field. And as much as I love how Lloyd has been scoring, some of it you can say is somewhat positional dependent, like he needs to stay in that particular role to keep scoring the way he has. Whereas in the midfield, your midfield is going to keep playing in the midfield. They just need to keep their form up, and you're not also dependent on role, which makes the back line a little bit more tricky when you're investing that much cash. I think Laird last year was a good example of somebody who was already expensive who we went, let's go again. But when you're basically scoring premium midfield averages already in the back line, the worst that he could burn you is, let's say, go up to 115. And yeah, sure, you don't have an absolute gun from the start, but at the same time, you're looking for value, as we tend to do with our starting teams. I don't see yourself getting too burnt by it either. I know he was in a lot of starting teams, and I've seen him drop out of quite a few as the preseason has commenced. So I have a feeling a big reason for that is his price tag. And so he's a low for me in our high, medium, low scaling. He's in my consideration set, but it's more if I have extra cash by the end of the season and I go, well, I can upgrade a Laird to Lloyd or a Simpson to Lloyd or a Hearn to Lloyd, then I'll just pay the cash to do it. But I don't think I'm going to manufacture a situation where I forcibly start Jake Lloyd in my team.
Yeah, I'll go the low as well. I'm sorry, I'm not across the ratings as well as you and Mark. I just just remind me to add those in.
All good. So to our listeners, I probably should have started with that again. A lock means you absolutely should start him. A high means that you're very likely to start him. A medium means he's quite heavy in your sort of consideration set. He's filtered in and out of your team during the preseason, but he hasn't locked himself in there. A low means you're considering starting him, and you might start him if sort of the salary cap fits or the team structure fits, but you want to wait and see. And a trap means that you don't think you should be selecting that player at all. All right, next player, Rory Laird. He's been in most of our teams for the last two seasons, and at 588K, he again comes at a premium. He averaged 108.3 last year, which was brilliant after starting 2018, coming off 100.2 average. Faz, are you considering going back to the well?
I'm considering it, but the point you raised before about there's so much cash that we have allocated to other parts of the field. The back line is the one line where I can see that there is a few better value options. And so those
mid-price madness.
Mid-price madness might be the story of my back line this year. And for that reason, Laird's price tag of 587 is scaring me off a bit. It's just hard to go away from him, though, because he is such a gun at Supercoach. I read in the prospectus today, I think it was Tom Mitchell is the only player in the league who's had more possessions than Laird over the last two or three seasons. And also his steady rise in scoring over the last 5 years or so. He just keeps going better and better, and that's why we keep having him in our teams from year to year. But at a certain point, there's got to be a cap on this. And up at that, what did you say last year was, 108 average?
Yeah.
It's very difficult to see him matching that again next year. So in 2019, taking another jump up from there, it seems to be about what those rebounding defenders sort of top out at, is about that 110 mark. So it's sad to say, but Laird, he's definitely somebody I'll be looking to, hopefully has a quiet game early in the season, and he'd be one of my first upgrade targets, but probably not to start this year. So I think it's going to be another low for Laird.
588K, and he's still in 39% of teams at the moment, which is the number one rated defender in terms of team selection so far. I think I agree with you in saying that 108.3 seems like a top end for a backline player. With Lloyd, he does get some transition through the midfield. And I guess Laird started doing that a bit last year through the wing. But 108.3 really seems like a bit more of a cap for a bloke who is more traditionally a defender. I think with Laird, the other concern is he gets a lot of the pill, but he doesn't necessarily rack up a whole lot of points with that pill, considering he's the second highest. He's the player with the second most disposals. You'd want to actually see a bit more than 108.3. And I think a big reason for that is he gets a lot of those chips from the back line into about that 25 to 30 meter mark, where he then is used to launch the ball forward, or he's chipping into that small space. And I question with the rule changes whether or not it actually hurts somebody like Rory Laird when they're going past where he's sitting in the sort of 25 to 50 meter mark in the back line. The other question that's surely got to be brought up is Brody Smith, who we will definitely discuss in a little bit, as the fourth most selected Supercoach backline option at 31%. Now, Brody's coming back into the team after only managing two games last year, and you'd assume with the talent that he has and the ability to kick the ball long that Smith has, he'll take away some points from Laird as well. So there's some risks that I see with Laird, and generally when you're looking to pay top dollar, you're looking to sort of pick a player that has minimal risk, and you're wanting them to keep that same average, but you really don't want them to go backwards. And I have slight concerns about Laird from that point of view. So a low for me as well, which I think that's a pretty controversial view that both of us have rated him low, considering he's in 39% of teams. Wow. All right, next bloke, James Sick Dog Sicily, 570,000. He is the 16th. Highest picked at 14% of teams at the moment. Averaged 105.1, of course, suspension and injury woes last year. Saw him not deliver anywhere close to the 22 games that we'd want. But his scoring potential is very high. Noted in the JLT1, he played up forward, but that was due to lack of personnel up forward. I would not be too concerned about that. But it's still a worthwhile note that if they have injuries, he might pivot forward as well. And Whether or not that's negative or positive to his scoring remains to be seen, because we haven't seen him average as a premium in the forward line before. Not to say he's not capable of, but that's definitely something to keep in mind. Another bloke who was very, very heavily picked at the start of the season that I've seen slowly being sucked out of teams, especially as we've been all apparently tempted to the mid-prices. What do you reckon about Sick Dog, Faz?
Well, I don't like to put too much stake in JLT scoring for premiums, but the fact that it's been a 62 and a 61 across the two games for Sicily, that has me a bit worried. I'm also going to be, of course, biased by previous seasons, and having had him last year, he just has that hot head, and I don't know.
Oh, if you could punch somebody out in the first round.
That just seems that it's not a if, it's a when, isn't it, with Sicily? Like, he's going to do something stupid. It's a bit like Toby Green. Some of these players just... there's been enough exposed form now that to go in thinking, oh, well, maybe he's turned over a new leaf, it's sort of wishful thinking, really, at this point.
They need to bring the same guy in that they brought into Richmond for mindfulness training.
Yes. If something like that happens, then maybe. But even that scoring in the JLT, the 62-61, I don't think people hear that and are shocked with Sicily.
Mm.
He does have the odd quiet game, and you know, that's part of how he gets his average so high is the huge games. He can score, you know, 130s, 140s pretty comfortably, but he also has the lower end. And so with that lower end in him, he's one that I think I'm going to be waiting and hopefully picking up at a much cheaper price than his current 570 mark. I think that he's someone that could be down below 500 at a certain point in the season. So Sicily... almost going to go as far as to say trap the potential that he's just going to, you know, wallop someone in game one. You then have this tough decision of what do you do with, you know, your high-priced defender premium who's now out for 1 or 2 weeks. So, yeah, Sicily, I'm going to give him the trap status.
The trap card. All right. I am a bit confused with what to do with Sicily. I can see him being a trap, but I can see him also just absolutely burning you. Like, Sicily has the talent and the X factor to potentially average 110 plus. And that's rare to say because a lot of X-factor players struggle with consistency. But in the back line, he's managed to achieve that level of consistency, which is a pretty scary prospect to leave on the table. But with the injury concerns and the hunt for value in the back line, he's probably a low for me at the moment, which I'm surprised to say because if we did this show at the start of the preseason, he was definitely much higher in the stakes. I think the other thing to maybe consider is Lloyd, Laird, they're playing for Sydney, Adelaide, both teams pundits would think have a good shot at making the top eight, whereas a lot of people actually have Hawthorn sliding out. They finished fourth last year, which is really impressive, but also a bit of an overperformance potentially. And so whether or not they drop down a bit and some of their players take a bit of a drop in their scoring remains to be seen as well. Next bloke definitely has that as a primary concern because he plays for Carlton, but he's managed to score well regardless of that in previous seasons, and that's Cade Simpson. He's in 6% of teams. He managed 105 as an average last year, so continues to knock it out of park. H, surely he's got to catch up eventually, no? Where do you have him, Faz?
I think the fact that he's going to be 35 in a few weeks' time just has me...
That's
me
crazy.
Right off. I think
that is crazy.
Fourth oldest player in the league. He keeps getting it done, and I think we keep doubting him. Mm. He's not really been someone that season after season we say, got to have Cade Simpson. We sort of look at it and go, oh, you know, sure he did it last year, but, you know, now's the time that he's going to start to fall off. And I think I'm going to do it again. I'm going to say it's time that he's going to fall off. What also worries me is he's got the two seasons in his past where he's sort of had the massive 105 plus scoring. It was last year and then back in 2016. But then the rest of his career, he's more of a sort of somewhere between 90 and 100 type player. And because of last year, that's what his price is based on. You're buying at the peak, I think. I don't see, I can't imagine how you could say there's a potential for a 35-year-old to get better and score more points this year. And so, with all of that, it seems like such a high risk to be taking a 35-year-old, almost 35-year-old at 570,000 in a team that's going to be bottom four again. You'd have to think that Carlton are sort of rebuilding again.
Yeah.
I'll try and keep the enjoyment out of my voice when I say that. But with all of that told, I think it's a low for me. Borderline trap again, I'd say.
Yeah, he's definitely a trap for me. I mean, I could go into the selection and say, consider Doherty and the fact he missed last year and he's missing again. blah, blah, blah. But the truth of the matter is you've got Lloyd, Laird and Sicily who are all above Simpson in my eyes. And then you've got Whitfield, who we're about to get to shortly. They all ended up in the top five averages last year. And so they all have upside, whereas Simpson doesn't. And he's off his second career high at the moment. So I just don't think there's a big reason to pick him at all. I'd rather go for youth. And so let's take us to Lockie Whitfield at 542K. Now, he surprisingly isn't as highly picked as Rory Laird. He's in 30% of teams, so close, which puts him at the sixth highest picked defender at the moment. He, for one, seems like a bloke that you'd be very comfortable almost locking in. He's very close to lock status for mine, having averaged 100 last year and potentially playing a bit more time on wing this year. Just such an uber-talented kid. Played the 22 games last year as well. It was still his first 22-game season, but in 2017, averaged 97.6. So you can say that he's, you know, it's not just a one-off so far. He's already sort of backed it up with two premium scoring seasons. Yeah, I can only see upside. It's going to be hard for me to pass up on Lockie Whitfield.
Yeah, I think I'll just point out as well, when we're saying he's the sixth highest selected player at the moment, that we're not going to go into them today, but that's also accounting for the rookies. And there seems to be a bit of a consensus there. So of the five players ahead of Whitfield, three of those are rookies. So he's the third highest selected of the non-rookies in the back line, and I can absolutely see why. My only question is why isn't it number one? He just seems like such a gun.
Yeah.
He was the number one draft pick, wasn't he? Has backed it up. Like, you see him play. He's great on both sides of his body. And I think it's sort of the GWS conundrum of too many midfielders. What do we do with them? So Whitfield has been the one who has moved down to the half back line. But I don't think that necessarily means that's where he stays for his entire career or for all of 2019. So I think he can get some midfield minutes again this year.
Next bloke, Shannon Hearn, 523K last year, a career best season, which really hurts me because I've been picking Hearn for a very long time. And it's the first time he's broken out to be a top six defender, always capable of doing that, watching the way he plays. And it's good to actually see him be able to consolidate on the season, playing 22 games and doing that. Across the last four seasons, he's played 22 games three times and 21 games last year. So he got over a lot of the hamstring injuries that really plagued him at the start or in the mid of his career. He's another bloke that it'd be interesting to see what the rules do to his scoring, because he was already a massive kick-out taker, but he can pump the ball really long as well. Shannon has easily a 60-meter boot on him. And so you could see him continuing to get those kickouts, but instead being able to run and then kick it out as well. Faz, what do you reckon? Hearn at 523?
Bit similar to Simpson, I think, that it's at that age where I can't see the upside as much. I know that he had his best season as a 31-year-old, but it seems unlikely that he's going to take another step up this year. He's sort of right on the fringe already of the top six. We're at number six now for those who have been counting along at home. So I can't see him. I can see him sticking around this level and, you know, having another sort of 95 average season. But I don't see a big jump up into 100-plus scoring for Shannon Hearn. As you said, great boot on him, but also has captain of the side, has big defensive responsibility. So I think there will be the odd quiet game, not because he's had a bad one, but just because he's been matched up on someone particularly important. So for all those reasons, I've got Hearn down at the low status.
Yep, agree with that. Simpson bucket is exactly where I'd place him. I don't see a massive upside. Next bloke, Jack Crisp, doesn't fall into the top six, but really wasn't very far off last year. Shannon Hearn averaged 96.4, Crisp 95.8, the next was 91.6. So it was a fair chasm between the top seven and the rest. And Crisp definitely surprised a lot with breaking out into that category, but then also his ability to maintain it throughout the season was very impressive as well. A very, very consistent player who seems to be able to get the ball in the half back line, but also get some possessions up in the midfield as well, or at least help move the ball through the midfield. I think his low was about 80 on average. Like, when I look back on his scores, I can see three scores under 80 and everything else was over 80, which is pretty damn impressive in the back line. He's one that's young and could have potential upside in him. Faz, what do you reckon?
Yeah, he's one that first glance I sort of overlook entirely, but the more I look into him, the more I like him. I think, as you said, age is a factor there. He's still young and has shown good steady growth over the last few seasons. He seems to be a very well-rounded player. He's strong defensively, but also is somebody that Collingwood like to use as they rebound the ball out of their defensive 50. So all in all, he seems like a pretty good budget premium option at that 519K mark. He, you know, he's quite a bit cheaper than the Lairds and Lloyds that we spoke about. It's almost a $100,000 discount from Jake Lloyd. Mm. I don't think he's quite up at that level of scoring, but if you feel like you need sort of just one more pretty safe, solid anchor pick in your back line, I think Crispy's quite a good option. It's just whether he can overcome, I think, the guys below him. I think that in comparison to the guys above, it's probably only Whitfield is the one that I would rank higher as more likely to make my starting team. Crisp, because of the value that he presents, is pretty high in consideration for my team. As we'll get into shortly, it's the value selections that I think he's competing with. So I'll put Crisp at a sort of medium to high rating right now.
Yep. I have slightly different take to him. I've got Lloyd, Laird, Sicily, and Whitfield all above Crisp because I have a lot more confidence he'll end up in the top six defenders again next year. But I won't be upset at all with starting Crisp. So he's starting as a low for me. You'd pick him if you ran out of salary. So if you didn't have the additional 50K to upgrade to Sicily or Laird, happily pick Crisp. I don't think he's going to go down. Just the upside is questionable. But, yeah, I'd probably still take a bona fide premium and risk the downside than pick Crisp. Before we go to the value selections, Faz, I'm just going to plug our Patreon group. We have 217 patrons at time of recording, and we're targeting 300 patrons this year. We managed to hit 250 last year, and so 300 would be a massive accomplishment. And if we do so, we're also going to give out $100 to the winner of the top scoring round at the end of the season for our Supercoach Coach Patreon group. So an extra little bonus if you jump on board. We're going to release a team picker as well in the next week to help you navigate how you select your Supercoach side. And that really helped out some of our patrons last year. So some bonus content to look forward to and a bit of incentive to join the patrons if you are so considering. All right, Faz, we've spent a bit on the top six defenders, so we're going to have to run through some of these value selections a little bit more quickly, but just want to cover some of the blokes that are very highly picked in Supercoach so far this year. And so we'll run through the top options and we'll start with Brody Smith, picked in 31% of teams at 333,000. He absolutely smashed JLT1 and certainly got a lot of people excited. Do you know what he scored in JLT2, Faz?
Yes, he got 97, so it certainly backed it up.
So based off that, he's basically slotted his way into a heap of teams. I know some people were slightly concerned before that point. Where do you have him, mate? Is he locked into your side or is that too far a bow to draw?
No, I think the JLT form has certainly got my ears pricked up with Brody Smith. I think there's a bit of residual resentment. He's a guy that's burnt us a bit in seasons gone past. But I think this year, at that price, at only 330,000, I think that he's a pretty important player to Adelaide. I think they like to have the ball in his hands as they come out of the back line. And you know, they now have an embarrassment of riches with Laird as well as the option. I don't think that Smith is going to slip off the radar with all of that. I think that they're going to use him as a bit of a tag team. And Brody Smith is very highly in consideration, not quite at the lock status yet because there's so many options out there. And I'm still sort of trying to get my structure in place in the back line, but Smith is very high for me.
333K, does that mean you're picking him to keep or picking him as a stepladder, Faz?
That's the difficult one because I had in my notes here, I had not a keeper in brackets with Smith, and he's probably right on that borderline where you would actually prefer if he could be a keeper. I think he might be one of those luxury upgrades for me later in the season. If all things pan out, I think that Smith can sort of get himself back up to about a 90 average, which I think is what he's done in the past. I'm not sure that he's sort of up in the sort of 95 to 100 range, which is where I'd like him to be. But I might sort of have to stretch my rules a bit to fit him in there because, as you've mentioned, he's such a highly selected player at this point in the preseason, and I can see the upside. So it's somebody that I wouldn't want to be watching. You know, the season starts, he's killing it, and I'm sitting there looking like a goose without him in my team.
Yeah, I think Something to note, you did average 93.5 in season 2014, playing 22 games. Since then, he's averaged 77 off 19, 75 off 21, and 82 off 22. So his scoring has dropped off a little bit from his career best. And if he averages 80 for the season, I think we would consider that pretty mediocre off 333K. So where my head's at with Smith is he'd be fantastic if he breaks out to 95, or if he has a few big games and I can trade him in, I can trade him out at about 500K to a true premium. Now, that makes his selection not a lock because you're either requiring him to do something he's never done before in his career, or you're looking to start a 333K play that you're then looking to trade out. So from a pure strategy and profile point of view, he is a very risky selection. So I'm very impressed with his preseason, but at 333K, you do need to think twice before you select him. So he's a medium to me. He's very tempting, but could potentially be a trap. Like if he gets to 85, sits at around the 440K mark and sort of peters along for the rest of the season, or worse, gets injured, then you'd really have a headache on your hands because you'd be side-swapping a player for maybe a 5 to 10-point increase max, which would be a bit of a struggle. I've got Smith out of my side at the moment, but the one thing that has me tempted to bring him in is the rule changes should definitely benefit a player like Brodie Smith. You'd think they're just going to try and give it to him, kicking out of the back line, run your distance and boot it 60 meters to the wing. The next bloke, on the other hand, in 30% of teams and 408K, I'm very, very tempted by almost close to a lock-like status, and that is Zach Williams. Faz, is that sort of hyping him up too much?
I think it is. I don't quite see the Williams appeal. I know that he's a very good kick of the ball. He likes to break through and sort of go for a bit of a dash before he gets on his boot. So the meters gained and that sort of stuff is quite good. And I know I think we only saw two games from him last year. So I think he's sort of off in the back of my memory, and I've sort of forgotten the type of player that he is because it just has been so long since we've seen him play. I'm also not encouraged by the fact that he missed JLT2. Have you got any news on that? Was that an injury or just a management issue?
I think it was just, minutes and management sort of thing.
Yeah, so I'm just, and at that price range, $400,000, I think, as you said already with Smith, ideally that's a keeper at 330. So a player at 400, you know, certainly has to be a keeper in our teams. And Williams, he had the 91 average back in 2017, which I don't think is enough. So I'd need to see a bit more improvement, but I'm definitely willing to be swayed on this, but right now I've probably got him sort of at a low to medium.
So I guess the temptation with Williams is he scored 88 in his fourth season in the AFL, 94 in his fifth season, and due to injury didn't play last year. So he just inherently offers value because he's discounted because he did not play. And then you've got the fact that Nathan Wilson left last year, and we didn't really get to see Zach Williams play that role after Nathan Wilson left GWS. And so you've got Lachie Whitfield slotting into the half-back line, almost taking that role. And I think Williams, if he gets to play a full season, will average, if not premium scores, very close to it. And so with the additional discount at 408K, having not played last year, he's a pretty darn tempting option. I think the other thing to consider is when he did average 94, he had a few games where he was pivoted up forward or put onto the wing. If you take some of those games out and you look at his bottom end, in the back line, he basically scored 80-plus for the entirety of the season. So he had an element of consistency. It's hard to have full confidence in a bloke that didn't play the entirety of last season, but you look at that sort of profile and go 94 before he got injured, now into seventh year, coming off with a discount, half-back player that he was competing with left the team. A lot of things just sort of tick the box there. But the risk is he doesn't graduate to be a full premium, in which case 408K would be a lot to have sitting as a non-premium or close to it. So he's a high for me. Next bloke, Dylan Roberton, in 25% of teams, 298K. He averaged, I think, close to 105 for certain patches and impressed many. Faz, where do you have Dylan Roberton in your consideration set?
Earlier today, he was probably at lock status. I didn't hear the news, which you had just shared with me, that he was it feeling a bit wonky after JLT2? Mm. And obviously with the heart condition that he has, I think that that's something that the club are going to be very cautious with. So it's really a bit of a unknown right now. I think I want a bit more information about him. But that aside, if that was just more of a something unrelated to the heart condition, I think that with the scoring that Robertson has shown he's capable of in the past, with 103 in JLT1, under $300,000, I think that that's a pretty great pick. I think that he's more than capable of getting to a 90 plus average. I don't really have many concerns about that. So at that price point, I think he's pretty close to lock status, subject to his health being all clear.
Yeah, under 300K is about the boundary where you don't need to keep them on for the entirety of the season, and you're pretty happy with that. Yeah, I don't think I have him as a lock, but I certainly have him as a high. The question marks out of the weekend where you had sort of that wonky feeling should be clarified in the next week. So we'll understand whether or not that should or should not impact him. But at the price point, even if he doesn't play out a full season, if he goes up enough in price, he can still be a pretty good pick without running out 2019. And that's sort of the benefit of picking a bloke that's under 300K. Next bloke, Andrew McGrath, in 16% of teams at 384K, looking to move permanently into the midfield this year. We've got an Essendon fan on, and so we definitely need to tap your brain now, mate. I've been tempted, but I'm not sold. What do you reckon?
Well, I feel a bit sheepish about this because, as you mentioned at the outset, I have been on one show so far this season. That was a Patreon-exclusive show. And in that one, I think I had McGrath as one of my first picked sort of lock players of the year. But now that I'm looking into it a bit more, looking at the other options available in the back line, I'm starting to get a bit cold feet when it comes to Andy. He's one of my absolute favourite players in the league. I think he's got insanely good ball use. He's such a disciplined player, and to number one draft pick getting put into the back line, I can see other players sort of kicking up a bit of a fuss about that. He just seemed to relish in the role. Was quite strong defensively, and any time he got an opportunity to break up the field and run, he seemed to do exceptionally well. But with all of that being said, he's now had 2 years in a row with a 70 average, and I thought that last year we would see a bit more. I thought that he'd have a bit of an increase in his second year. Yeah, so just having a third-year player that I'm at that price point, he has to be a keeper. $384,000.
Yeah.
There's no upgrading of Andy McGrath if he has a good start to the year and then starts to peter off a bit. That combined with a fair bit of competition in Essendon's midfield, I think that they do want to give him games up in the guts. But we all know he's not the biggest built bloke. In comparing him to sort of the Dylan Shields and Dyson Heppels that we have in the midfield, I can see him potentially being squeezed out of the midfield a bit and maybe playing more of a wing role. So with all of that combined, I think that I'm probably going to leave Andy McGrath out of my team at this point. So I probably got him more at the low rating. It's hard to say this because I love him so much as a player, but I think I need to try and divorce my Essendon fandom from my Supercoach picking at this point. Didn't set the world on fire either in JLT, had 85 and then a 71. Of course, I'd be thrilled if he does well this year and can turn into the player that I think he's capable of being. But with some of those other options out there, you can get Zach Williams for pretty much the same price. There's about $20,000 difference in those two players. Zach Williams has had a couple of seasons of premium scoring in his history, and it's just at that later stage in his career where I feel a bit more confident about him taking the next step or at least staying where he is. With Andy, it's a little bit, there's just a few too many uncertainties in all of this that has me now getting those cold feet.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call. The number of mid prices he's competing against is pretty high at the moment, and I think when you're talking about a third-year breakout player, you tend to want to see dominant JLT form. So considering he has not delivered that, sadly, he slides backwards in the consideration set a little bit. Now, Faz, we're basically out of time, but we'll just get you to score a few of these blokes before we wrap up the show. So Nick Newman, how do you rate him?
He's a low for me.
394K in 13% of teams at the moment. I think I'd agree with that. At 394K, you need to see him averaging premium numbers, so low to trap for me. How about Darcy Moore at 239K, another mid-pricer?
Fantastic. That price there, 239. I've got Darcy Moore actually pretty high. I didn't think I would, but in doing the research for this week's show, I did note that Collingwood don't really have too many other key defenders. Their other options are Lyndon Dunn and Tyson Goldsack, both 31 years old. So I think that Darcy Moore is probably the key defender of the future for Collingwood. Good intercept player. Of course, injury concerns are very high with this guy, but at that price, you don't need him to stay on the park for 22 games. You need about 6 or 7. Hopefully there's a couple of decent scores in there, which with his intercept marking, I think he's capable of. And then you can ship him on and wish him well. I think Darcy Moore's pretty high in my consideration right now.
Yeah, he's medium for me. He's moving up the ranks as I'm trying to find space to squeeze in all the ultra premiums that I want. But I have serious question marks about how much of a defensive role he's going to have to play. Alex Witherden, 455K in 12% of teams.
He's a medium for me. Good youngster, but still, I just don't know if he's got the ability to jump up into the true premium scoring. And of course, at that price point, you need him to.
Averaged 87 in his first season, 84 last year. Did have a game where he only played 11 minutes time on ground in the last round and scored 13 Supercoach points, which dragged down his average. So I can see the temptation in sort of value that he presents. Callum Mills, 429K in 8% of teams, Faz.
Mid to high, if he can play in the midfield, which I think he's done a bit of in the preseason, then I can see why people are thinking about him. Had 106 in the first JLT and 89 Dream Team points in the second. So some pretty encouraging signs there from Callum.
Yeah, to me, he looks pretty similar to the Andrew McGrath type pick. You're picking them based on talent, but you're not exactly sure if this year is going to be the year that he breaks out absolutely. There's talk of him moving into the midfield, but there's the same talk with McGrath. And last year, they talked about that with McGrath, and he didn't end up playing midfield. So everybody plays in the midfield until we have to actually play games, and Mills might be needed down back throughout the course of the season. So I have question marks at 429K. All right, Faz, that's it for this show. Do you have any sort of final thoughts on the Supercoach backline and where your head is at after recording the podcast?
Well, I think I'm coming away with more questions than I entered with. I think
there's a lot of options in the backline.
So many options and no clear standouts entire show there.
Yeah.
There seem to be far too many sort of mediums, low to mediums. I couldn't even settle on a rating for a lot of these players. So it's still plenty of thoughts and work to go into selecting this team.
How mid-price do you think you're going to go, mate? Because that's the big question on everybody's lips at the moment. Mid-price madness in the back line.
Yeah, it seems like I might be. I don't like to admit this, but yeah. I think I've got the two premium rucks. I'm going for a pretty guns and rookies strategy in the midfield. And when I'm saying guns, I'm really spending a lot of money on these guys. They're sort of all 600 plus.
Yeah.
I think that with all of that, the squeeze is going to be in the back line. So it might just be Whitfield and then a few of the sort of sub 450, starting out. I think, Zach Williams could end up being my D2 to start. And then sort of a Smith and Darcy Moore type, and then the rest rookies.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? I know it's early days with rookies.
Yeah. At the moment, I only have one of the top seven last year locked. And then after that, very tempted by the value selections. And I think each year we try and find a position where we can get some value. A lot of the times it's the back line. But the other thing to consider is that there's also a lot of backline rookies, which might sort of change the structure of our teams a little bit. So tune in for our next show. The last show of the preseason will be recorded the weekend before Supercoach lockout. Mark should be back on and we're going to discuss team structure, some rookies, and do a recap of the JLT and see where everything sort of shook up. So I think I need a bit more time to ponder. As we're recording this, the Collingwood game is about to start for the last game of the JLT. So I think I need a bit of time to digest and sort of see where the team shakes out. All right, Faz, thanks very much for coming back on for the preseason podcast. And we look forward to hearing from you throughout the season, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And good luck to everyone out there finalizing the teams. I'll be, as with everybody else, waiting with bated breath for next week's podcast. Don't want this, get crazy. Don't want this, get crazy. Let's get crazy.